Kia ora and welcome to Amron's Podcast, episode 227. Today is Tuesday, July 27, 2010. This is, again, Māori Language Week, but I've talked about that in two previous episodes, last year and 2 years before that, and I'll put links to the show notes for anybody who's really interested in that. But since I have talked about it in the past, I'm not really sure that there's anything new I can say. So I think instead I'll just put links to those episodes for anybody who wants to go back and hear them. But it is the annual week in which New Zealand promotes our indigenous language, Māori. And I was saying to Nigel last night that I sort of wish that this would be the week when tourists would visit New Zealand so they can see a language that's unique to New Zealand. But unfortunately, it is winter here. Yes, it is still winter here in the Southern Hemisphere. And so we don't get as many tourists, although we do for the South Island, for the ski fields, or in the Central Plateau on Mount Uruapehu, which I believe is the only active volcano in the world that people ski on. I may be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure it is. And it's spectacular country around there. But, of course, a lot of people go to the South Island ski fields this time of year. So I suppose they will, well, if they're not too busy out in the pubs or on the slopes, they may see some of it. But the news begins each night with some Māori, and when they give the weather, they usually replace the English town names and cities and towns with the Māori name. For instance, Auckland's other name is Tamaki Makaurau, all of which makes it very interesting. But as I said, I have talked about it before, so I think I will leave it at that for this year. Maybe I'll talk about it again next year. Maybe I'll alternate. Maybe that's what I'll do. Today, I just have a few little updates, little bits and bobs, and I'm eventually going to get back into doing regular topics again. I don't know when. I suppose it depends on if I have any ideas for topics. And I rely on you to tell me what you'd like to know about. I have been a wee bit lazy lately, I will admit, and haven't exactly put a lot of effort into researching topics to talk about. And I've been blessed, you could say, by Hydrogen for having news topics come to me. And nothing's changed. But first, the weekend. I don't often talk about the things that we're doing or where we're going, what we're doing, that sort of stuff. But I talked about this last year, so I thought I might as well talk about it again this year. We went down to Pairoa for Nigel's mum's birthday, her 75th birthday this year. And unlike last year, we didn't stay. We just went down for the day. It's just Saturday. And unlike last year, it wasn't nearly as cold. It was much milder this year, which was nice. Still, it wasn't exactly warm, so you know, the house was kept closed up, but we didn't need to have the heat on or anything like that, so that was all a good thing. But it was a lovely day. We got there noon-ish, maybe 12:30 at the latest, and we all brought stuff for lunch, and then after that was done, we just sat around and talked and visited and carried on, and went on, came home about 5:30-ish, maybe? Something like that? I'm not sure. We didn't even have dinner that night because we were so stuffed. We got home about 8, as I recall. It's about an hour and a half drive. But no, it was a very good day, lovely day. But one of the bits of entertainment for the day was Nigel's iPad, which he bought the day before. They went on sale on Friday here in New Zealand, and I've talked about this elsewhere, including my blog. But basically, the story is that Apple wasn't saying where you could buy an iPad. It was all this big mystery. And if you rang any of the retailers that you thought might carry an Apple iPad, they would say they wouldn't know until Friday. Well, how gullible do they think we are? And this really annoyed me because I could not for the life of me figure out what Apple was getting out of this deal. Because all they were doing is pissing off their customers by being cagey about where you could get an iPad. It turns out they had ample supply, so it's not like they were about to run out or anything. And I can't for the life of me figure out why they were playing that game, but they were. So Nigel was looking around on the internet. He rang stores to see if they carried it. They all said the same thing. Oh, we don't know. And even on the night before, the evening before they went on sale, oh, we don't know. One of them said, well, you might call this store if you were just sort of thinking about it, or you might show up at that store and try to give him a hint. But none of those were very helpful suggestions. And then he was looking on the internet and found out that one store was opening at 8 a.m. on Friday. They usually open at 9. So he thought, aha, it's actually the same store where I got my MacBook. So he thought, yeah, that's where it is. So he left the house very early that day and got there and ended up being second in line. And what they did is they let him and the guy in front of him into the store early to have a bit of a play and also to choose what they wanted and to get their details, their payment details all ready to go. So that at 8 a.m. on the dot, they rang up the first sale. So the guy in front of Nigel got the first iPad legally sold in New Zealand, and Nigel got the second. And it was all a big game, but they made sure that they exited the store before 8 o'clock so that in case there were any Apple spies running around. And I'm thinking, why do they care? For goodness sake, they're just selling a stupid piece of technology. Be that as it may, Nigel, as Nigel does, got a screen protector for it, you know, to protect it from damage. And he got a fancy schmancy case to wrap it in. You can fold the cover. It's like a kind of like a notebook, like you might take to a meeting to take notes. But you can fold the cover back and on itself to make a little easel to stand it up horizontally. And I think, yeah, horizontally. And they had, I think, several on sale, I think he said. But there was only one that had the Apple logo on it. And he and the guy who got the first iPad were agreeing, well, why would, if you spend all this money on an Apple product, why would you get somebody else's cover for it? Why wouldn't you just get the Apple one? So that's what they both did, as it turns out. So he's very happy. He got the 64 gig Wi-Fi version because he is going to tether it to his iPhone so that he doesn't have to have 3G on it because... Of course, as we probably all know by now, the speculation is that Wi-Fi is going to be the main way to connect data devices and not 3G. I don't know about such things, so those of you who feel differently, don't come down on me. I'm just saying what I've heard. I don't know about these things. But that's what he's doing. In order to do that, he has to jailbreak the iPad, I think it is. Yeah, it must be the iPad. And I don't really have any idea what he's doing, and I don't really want to know because it would hurt my brain. I'm not the technical one in the family, that's for sure. So he got that, and he's very happy. The iPhone 4, goes on sale this Friday here in New Zealand, and there, Apple is again playing the same game where they're not telling anybody where they'll be on sale. I actually don't think it'll be at the same store this time because I don't think they sell iPhones. I could be wrong about that. But in any case, neither of us are getting an iPhone at the moment. Nigel has an iPhone 3GS, and at some stage down the road, probably 3 or 4 months, he's going to get a new iPhone, get the new iPhone, and then he's going to give me his old one, his 3GS. And then I'm going to have an iPod Touch that will be surplus to requirements. But it's a first generation, so I don't know what I'd do with it anyway, because he can't upgrade it anymore. But... that's the plan. Who knows? Things may change. But I would really dearly love to have an iPad. I have to admit, now having seen one and actually played with one, although I thought I would anyway. And the main thing I want it for, and I know a lot of people kind of cringe when I say this, is I would like it to be, like it primarily for an e-reader. So that, oh, it's raining. I don't know if you can hear that. You can hear that roaring in the background? I don't know. It's raining hard. Because it is winter, after all. Did I mention it's winter? It's winter. Anyway... I downloaded Stanza and also the Kindle Reader for my iPod Touch, and it works very well. Both of them work well. I prefer Stanza, but the problem is that the screen is really small and my eyes are getting really old, and so I can't read it quite as well as I used to. And the sample book or whatever that came with iBook for Nigel, or I don't know where he got it from anyway, the sample book was really quite legible. I mean, it's basically the same size page as... What do they call them? They used to call them trade paperbacks. I don't know what they're actually called. The same size as a hardback book, but soft cover. I don't know. Whatever they're called nowadays. And so it's, you know, completely readable. And I could certainly deal with that. And, of course, it would make words with friends a lot easier than it is on the iPod Touch.
Because it's just a little screen.
But I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be getting one or if I am anytime soon. I don't know that I can... really justify it as much as I would like to have one, because I do have an iPod Touch and I also have a MacBook, and the MacBook does more than the iPod Touch does, although I wouldn't sit and read a book on it, and I find it difficult to read a book on the iPod Touch because it's so small. So I don't know. I just have to wait and see what happens. I suggested to Nigel I could, you know, sell a body part or something in order to be able to buy an iPad, but I don't think that's going to happen. Who'd want my crusty old bits? But anyway, so that's been our excitement over the past, well, half week, I suppose. And I did seriously consider recording on Friday. Well, actually, if you listen to the episode I posted on Friday, one of the reasons I was thinking about re-recording was because I wanted to mention the iPad. But then I decided it just wasn't worth it. And I also knew that the stuff that I talked about, I'd never cover again. I'd never get it quite right. So I thought, just leave it, forget it, and go with it. Which is what I did, of course, as you know. As I'm sure you know. But I said that the news always gives me something to talk about, and it didn't fail me today either. Well, yesterday, technically. The government announced that it is working on changes to, well, I suppose it's alcohol laws. What, among other things, they're going to make a zero tolerance or zero level or whatever for drivers under the age of 20, which means, because the drinking age in New Zealand is 18, which means that anybody who's, I believe, 20 or younger, or maybe 20 is the cutoff, I don't know, anyway, will, technically speaking, not be able to drink a drop if they're going to drive. And because most people think this is a jolly good idea, and I tend to as well, because the statistics show that the highest rates of alcohol abuse are among the young, and the highest rates of crashes are also among the young, and they are very often alcohol-fueled. And anything that could make it so that they may not be able to drink and drive has got to be a good thing. However, the government resisted the push to lower the alcohol limit for adults as well. And that has been a bone of contention, with some people saying, well, they should have done that, and other people saying, well, no, it's none of their business, and blah, 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 blah. You know how these things go back and forth. I suspect that the reason that they didn't do that is because they thought, with so many other things that are unpopular with middle New Zealand, they didn't want to do anything that middle New Zealanders might think of as an attack, and they'd rather wait until after the election. That would be my guess. I don't know. But these changes, they do want to have through, they said, by early 2011, and I suspect what they really mean is to get them done before the summer holidays. But I don't know. We'll see. But among other things, repeat drink drivers are going to have their cars fitted with one of those interlock devices, the ones where you have to breathe into in order to be able to start the car. And there are all kinds of problems with that technology. I know. You don't have to tell me. I know. But at least it's a thing that can be done to try to minimize drink driving. And I suppose anything that reduces it, especially for recidivist drink drivers, has got to be a good thing. And if nothing else, if you get in a car and you see somebody's got one of these things fitted onto it and they're drunk, or you think they're drunk, you might think twice about staying in the car with them, knowing their history. Or I mean, you might even be socially responsible and take the keys off them. But I digress. So there are other similar reforms that are thought of, including increasing the penalties for drink driving and causing a death from drink driving, all that sort of stuff, which is not all that terribly interesting unless you're a victim or the family of a victim. Generally speaking, harsh penalties don't tend to deter drink drivers, because the issue there, generally speaking, by the time they get behind the wheel, it's too late. They've lost their sense of judgment, and they can't say, well, I better not get in the car because I might get done. They don't think like that. They just, at that point, they're past it, by and large. The real good thing would be if you could keep them from getting in the car in the first place before they ever get to that point. But that's a whole other issue in itself, and one I don't care to go into right now. But it is an issue. Now, there are other things that are going on in the news. Most of them aren't terribly interesting. I will freely admit that. It tends to be stuff that's only interesting to New Zealanders, or to even smaller, to your local town. For instance, Pauro is getting a McDonald's. Woohoo! Now, the only reason that sticks in my mind is with a tinge of resentment, is because when we lived in Pauro, there was nowhere to go to get fast food. There was nothing. There were local, you know, there was a, what's it called, Midway Burger Bar, which was, you know, did burgers and fish and chips and, you know, normal Kiwi Tucker. But there wasn't any fast food type stuff. And there are times when that's what you want. And we had nothing. Well, there is a Subway there now. But there was no Burger King, McDonald's, Wendy's, anything like that. The nearest McDonald's was in Thames, which is a half an hour drive away. Or you could drive to Hamilton, which is further. It's a better part of an hour, maybe 45 minutes to an hour, something like that, for burgers. But there was nothing in Powerall. Well, there isn't. There's going to be one now. They're building it at the intersection of two state highways, one that leads from, well, basically Hamilton-ish to Thames, and another that leads from Powerall, well, actually leads from Auckland, really, to Tauranga. It's the main route between the two cities. And but to do that, they tore down a hotel that I'm pretty sure was built around the turn of the century, you know, early 1900s. And I'm just absolutely shocked that they were able to do that. And everybody's saying, oh, yeah, but it was a wreck. It was all decrepit. I'm thinking, uh-huh. Yeah, I'm sure it was. I would have thought that would have been on the Register of Historic Places, but apparently not. Because I suppose it's also possible it was built in the style of, but wasn't really from that era. I don't know. But I don't know. There's a lot of disrespect for history throughout New Zealand. And I haven't talked about this very much, I suppose. But one of the things is I've mentioned what used to be called the Maori Wars back in the days when people didn't even talk properly. And they're now called the New Zealand Wars. And essentially it was the colonial government trying to take land off the Maori. And that's what started all of the grievances and led to the Treaty of Waitangi settlement processes and all sorts of other things. Particularly in Taranaki, where the settlers of the day seized all of the land for their own farms. Well, there are battlefields all over New Zealand where the North Island anyway, where these sorts of things happened, where these battles happened. And most of them aren't marked in any way. It was happening at about the same time as the U.S. Civil War, most of it. And you know how many battlefield monuments and markers there are for that. So it makes it, to me anyway, all the more jarring that there's nothing much here to show where all of these events happened. Now, some of them are marked. I mean, don't get me wrong, but a lot of them are really not very well marked. And we even noticed similar things when we went up to Northland for our honeymoon back in October. We went and visited Russell, which was the site of the first capital of New Zealand. And there is a sign indicating where the actual first capital was. It's actually not at Russell. It's further south. But I couldn't see exactly where it was. It was raining. We didn't get out and have a good look around. But there was no reconstruction. There was no, I don't know, specific marker to tell you where it stood. So, I mean, you couldn't tell where all of this was happening. But actually, you know, speaking of capitals and history, yesterday was the anniversary of the shift of the capital from Auckland to Wellington. And one of the things about that is that it was decided by a bunch of Australians. They were sent over here to find the best place for a new capital for the country. And the reason they wanted to move the capital was it was just very inconvenient for people from the South Island to come up for meetings of Parliament, you know, the parliamentarians, because it was a long sea voyage from, say, Christchurch to Auckland. There was no rail at the time. There were no roads to speak of, you know, the tracks mostly. And this was in the 1860s, or late 1850s, early 1860s when all this was going on. And at the time, there was a gold boom in Otago, in the South Island. And there was a brief time when the majority of the population was in the South Island. It, of course, changed as time went on and the cities in the north grew. But in the early days of New Zealand, particularly around that time, the times of the gold rushes, that wasn't the case. There was a time when Thames, which I mentioned before, which is also a gold mining town, had more people than Auckland, which is across the harbor, not the harbor exactly, but the gulf. It's the other side. It's not that little... Oh, never mind. Look on a map. It's east of Auckland. You'll see it at the bottom of the Firth of Thames. It's easier to say that than trying to explain where these things are if you're not familiar with the geography. So anyway, that's a long way to go talking about the drink driving changes. That was the news. That was the only interesting thing, the only thing I found interesting in the news over the past week. Well, past few days anyway, since I last recorded, nearly a week. And hopefully there'll be something before I next record, which I think will be on Friday. Now, Jason and I are meant to do a Too Political this week. We actually were originally going to do one today, but something came up. And I don't know specifically when we're going to be doing that. But hopefully sometime this week. And then next week is back to normal again, I suppose. Except that I'll probably only be doing one next week because it's a busy week for me next week. So we'll see. We'll see how things go. Play it by ear. But speaking of podcasts, there have been a couple I've been meaning to mention for a while, and I keep forgetting, partly because I don't write things down. But I did this time. And the first one is the podcast from Tim Carmel. He used to do two podcasts. He used to do Go Rainbow Radio, which he's since ended. And also There's Some Who Call Me Tim. Well, he's revamped his personal journal podcast. And the new one is called The Tim Carmel Show. And he's been doing these political discussions with various liberals and progressives. I believe he's met them all through Twitter, or primarily through Twitter anyway. And they've been really interesting. And do give it a try. It's The Tim Carmel Show, which is timcarmel.com. And I will, of course, put a link in the show notes. But I've been enjoying them immensely. And we're planning at some stage to do a crossover with Too Political, where we'll do like half the show on Too Political and the other half on his show. And the idea basically is to trade listeners so that some of his listeners will listen to Too Political and some of ours will listen to him. And the idea behind that is that, well, I actually did a blog post on this topic. And there is just so much right-wing media out there, a lot of mass behind, you know, bulk. And the center-left doesn't have much. I mean, MSNBC is the closest thing that liberals and progressives have to a network. And it's, let's be honest, its ratings are tiny. Air America is gone. So, I mean, what else is there? And so we're thinking, you know, if we can sort of foster these connections through the social media and through the new media like podcasts and, well, videos too, I suppose, and all that, it's got to be a good thing. We can at least have discussions among ourselves and maybe help move the agenda forward rather than just kind of sitting back and reacting all the time. That's the thinking anyway. We'll see. I hope it works. But the other podcast I've been meaning to mention, and I keep forgetting, is the new podcast from Nessa. Now, of course, Nessa used to be with We're Mean Because You're Stupid quite some time ago. And then she and her husband, Derek, had Stars and Tartan. And she recently launched a solo podcast called Hello, Nessa. And it's a personal journal podcast. And she basically has said that she's essentially reintroducing herself to herself. And I have listened to all four episodes. Number three was particularly moving for me. And I identified with a lot of things she was saying about long-distance relationships and dealing with a partner from another country and all that sort of stuff. But I also was thinking about it, particularly with that episode, but all of them, and that's that first of all, I really like her style. I like the way she just starts the podcast, which is, it's different from the way most of the other personal journal podcasts do it. And I really like the way she does it. Also, I think it's one of the best personal journal podcasts out there. I mean, mine is technically a personal journal, but I don't always, or even often, talk about stuff going on in my life. I talk about stuff I find interesting, stuff I want to share, all that sort of stuff, but I don't necessarily talk about personal stuff. And, of course, most personal journal podcasts don't. Most personal journal podcasts are kind of varied. They'll talk about all sorts of different things. But I think that hers is one of the best out there. Now, it is only four episodes so far, and they're not terribly long, so it won't take you long to get caught up. So I would suggest, strongly suggest even, that you give Nessa a listen. It's a great podcast. She's a wonderful person, and she deserves as many listeners as she can get. And of course, I'll put a link in the show notes. She is already in, I think she's already in my links. I'll check that, and if not, by the time you hear this, I will have fixed it. But yes, do give her a listen, by all means, and it comes with the Emron Seal of Approval. Oh, and Nessa, because I know you listen, this is just for you. Fuck, shit, cunt, damn. Nessa loves it when I swear. Okay, that is all of the topics I wanted to go over. Now I have the, what do you call it, the comment section of the show. Now, I really should have a theme or whatever just for going over written comments, but I don't. And actually, speaking of comments, I noticed last time I referred to phone comments as voice letters. And it just goes to show how far some people's influences go. The first comment is from episode 224 onward. And I don't always go back for previous episodes, but I thought this one had stuff worth talking about. And it's from Benk, who said, "Hi there, Arthur. I just wanted to second your recommendation to go cold turkey when it comes to learning a new measurement system. You told us you had done that in adapting to Metric. As a Kiwi in the U.S., I had to go the other way, But cold turkey is still the best way to get used to a new, and in my situation, stupid, why won't the U.S. go metric? Why? A system. And temperature is the trickiest new set of numbers to learn. How could it be 75 degrees and I'm not dead? 100 degrees Celsius, for the benefit of my American friends, 100 degrees Celsius is the boiling point of water. So that's why 75 would be fatal. And Bank goes on. And as a side question, what do you call the American measurement system, aside from willfully idiosyncratic? Growing up in a newly metric New Zealand, the old system was called imperial, but no one seems to use that here. Measure the yours, Bank. Well, thank you, Bank. And you're right, I don't actually know what this system is called. I do remember that I used to see it listed in almanacs as the U.S. system of weights and measures, but whether that's the official name or just a convenient name, I don't know. I do remember distinctly going to Canada as a kid and seeing that gasoline was sold in imperial gallons, but I have no idea what that is or was or whatever. And I don't know that Americans actually have a name for the system. They don't use imperial. Everybody I know here refers to that as the imperial system. I always call it U.S. because I don't know that Americans would know what I was talking about if I said imperial system by and large, except maybe the old folks like me. But As I said, I don't know that it has a name. It is based on the imperial system. Whether it has its own special name or not, I just don't know. But I bet you I know who will know. And I won't mention because I bet you he will comment if I'm lucky. but the other thing, why won't the U.S. go metric? I have talked about this a little bit in the past. And the short answer is I have no idea. But the longer answer is there's this inertia that sets in. And I remember in the early to mid-70s, we all were saying, the whole world is changing to our system. Why should we change to theirs? Of course, that was absolute nonsense. But Nigel was telling me, of course, it's going back a ways, just before I came to New Zealand, that even then he would run into people in chat rooms and forums and things who were convinced that the rest of the world was changing to the U.S. system instead of the metric system, which even then, this is about what would have been 20 years later, was still nonsense, but people still believed it. And as I've also said before, there has been a sort of a secret move to toward conversion. Federal office buildings were, at least up until Bush-Cheney, I don't know if it's changed, were being built to the metric system, meaning that contractors had to go out and buy metric tools in some cases, or metric tape measures anyway, so they could measure the distance properly. But aside from that, there's not a whole lot of requirement. But what is also happening, and I think I talked about this a long, long time ago, is that a lot of times U.S. measures are quietly being changed to international measures, even though on the label it still says fluid ounces. The size is actually related to the metric equivalent that's sold in the rest of the world. It might be 330 mils, for instance, or 500 mils or something. But you'll see it in the U.S. in fluid ounces, even though that's the same size that's sold throughout the world. Companies, to save costs, will have one measure throughout the world. They just don't call it that in the U.S. So in many ways, the U.S. already has converted to the metric system. They just don't know it. But now on to the most recent episode, 226 Clause. And the comment was from Roger Green, who said, "Know what term initially startled and still baffles me? The Jew's harp." And provides a link. By the way, Betty White described herself as 88 and a half on Saturday Night Live in May. Yeah, I have heard some people over 80 use at least the half description, though my mother, 82 and a half, does not. Happy half birthday. Thank you, Roger. And I actually never got to see that Betty White episode because Saturday Night Live is not played in the New Zealands. Although Comedy Central shows older episodes eventually. And when I say older, I mean... Well, actually, I don't know how old they are because I've never watched one, so I don't know. But it is theoretically possible to acquire it through means, if you know what I mean. But I have not done so, so I haven't seen that episode as of yet. But as to the Jew's harp, when I was growing up, I always thought it was called a juice harp. And I remember that in Chicago, I used to watch Garfield Goose. And it was a children's show that was on in the afternoons after school. And it featured Fraser Thomas as, actually, I don't remember if he had a character name. I think it was just Fraser. Anyway, and he had a talking goose, named Garfield Goose, a stuffed rabbit called Romberg Rabbit, and there's Macintosh Mouse, and then there was a detective dog, a sort of a basset hound, and his name was Beauregard Burnside III or something like that. And he would fall asleep all the time, and Fraser Thomas would lift his ear and go, "Hot dogs, hamburgers, spaghetti, and meatballs!" And he would wake up, and then they would carry on the conversation. Now, none of these critters talked. It was, they would move their heads, or in the case of the goose, it would clap, you know, like that. And he would interpret that for his kids. But it, through the magic of television, and because kids will believe anything, I believe that he was interpreting these, and I'm putting quotes now, animals. But one of the things he did is he played a juice harp, and I'm positive he said juice harp. But nevertheless, Wikipedia, the font of all knowledge, has a, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, actually, they have a video. It's called Etymology of the Phrase. And I'm just going to read that because it does provide some explanations as to where it comes from. And because I know that most people probably aren't going to bother to go to the show notes to follow the links. And they say, there are many theories for the origin of the name Jew's harp. One proposed explanation is that it's a corruption of jaw harp, while a less likely explanation espoused by some is that the name comes from juice harp for the amount of saliva produced when played by inexperienced players. Both of these explanations lack historical backing, as both the jaw and the juice variants appeared only in the late 19th and 20th centuries. It has also been suggested that the name derives from the French jeton or something, meaning toy trumpet. The Oxford English Dictionary calls theories that the name is a corruption of jaws or jeu based on baseless and inept. It goes on, oh, that's pretty damning, isn't it? And goes on to say, more or less satisfactory reasons may be conjecture, e.g., that the instrument was actually made, sold, and sent to England by Jews, or supposed to be so, or that it was attributed to them as a good commercial name, suggesting that the trumps and harps mentioned in the Bible. Well, whatever. I still grew up calling it the juice harp. Geez, you actually found out quite a lot about me in that little thing, that telling you about my childhood program, which I remember so vividly, even though I haven't seen it in 40 years, perhaps? More than 40 years, probably? Or whatever? Oh, dear. And to end today, I have a Creative Commons song, as I have for the past few episodes. Only this one is not one that I first heard on Pride 48. The truth is, I cannot remember for the life of me where I first heard about this or what led me to it. But it's by an artist by the name of Glenn Phillips, and he has a, I suppose it's sort of an EP more than, well, disc, whatever, called the Free Glenn Phillips Sampler, which is a clever, snappy name. But and I downloaded it and listened to it, and I thought, you know, this sounds familiar. But, I mean, that's not particularly surprising when you hear a new artist or when you're not familiar with. It's natural to think of who they do sound like or who they remind you of. So I didn't think anything of it. Well, at the time that I signed up for the to download the sampler, you had to give your email address. That's no longer true, by the way, but I did. And I got an email from him, and he talked about going and doing a Toe the Wet Sprocket concert. And then it suddenly hit me. He is the lead singer of Toe the Wet Sprocket. Now, if you don't know who they are, or were, or are, I suppose, they are, well, sort of a rock band, pop rock band, who were formed apparently originally in the mid-80s, but around 1990, 91, I think it was, they released an album called Fear, and that had two hits on it, one called Walk on the Ocean, we spotted the ocean. And another song, and a bigger song from my point of view anyway, was called All I Want. Now, that song I absolutely adored. In those days, I didn't have a CD player, and I think the car only had a radio, didn't have a cassette player or anything. And at the time, my boyfriend and I were doing work on our apartment, and I needed to keep going to the home center to pick up supplies. And so I'd have to drive over then, because it was a top 10 hit at the time. It was on the radio a lot. And I remember I would always crank it up and sing along. Yeah, I'm like that. Or was, anyway. So that was from their album Fear, and the next album was called Dulcinea, and both of them went platinum in the U.S. Fear only went to number 49 on the charts, but it went to number 34. Dulcinea went to number 34. And on that album was a song called Crowing, and Glenn Phillips has included a live acoustic version of that on his free sampler. And that's the song I've chosen to use as my outro today. And the reason is that even though all but one of the songs on the sampler are Creative Commons, I decided that one, on that one, because since it's from a reasonably popular album, there's at least a chance that some of you may be familiar with it. So that's why I picked that one. One last thing before I go. Be sure to join Nigel on The Third Colony this Saturday between 9 p.m. and 11 p.m. Eastern on, it's in the Americas, of course, on QNation.fm. This week he's playing music from the UK and Ireland, having already done New Zealand and Australia. He's moved on to the UK and Ireland. And for information on how to listen or to join the chat room, go to The Third Colony, all smushed together, thethirdcolony.com, and find all the things you need to know there. But hope to see you between 9 p.m. and 11 p.m. Eastern on Saturday on QNation.fm. That's it for today. And now from the album Live at Largo, included on the free Glenn Phillips sampler, this is Glenn Phillips with Crowing. Have a great rest of the week. Bye.
You've been waiting to find that you could have been happier given the time. Feed maker is mine. You'd give yourself to anybody who would cross that line. And it was never a question. You were crowing for repair. You'd given love and affection, but you couldn't keep him there. Get over regrets. While you were sleeping with the angels, he was under the bed. And the more skin that you share, the more that the air in your throat will linger when you call him your friend. And it was never a question. He was crowing for repair. You'd given love and affection, but you couldn't keep him there. Staring at a cold little lamb, reading fog lines of the shell of a man. You were waiting for a word from above. Wouldn't you know it? No answer ever did come, and it was never a question. You crowing for repair. You'd given love and affection, but you couldn't keep him there. And it was never a question.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed on a Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.